ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यास ततो जयमुदीरये। We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Text Number 38. This is Narada Muni speaking to Srila Vyasadeva. Iti murtya vidanena mantra murtim amurtikam yajate yagya purusham sasam yag darshana puma. Iti, thus, murti, representation, abhidhanina, in sound, mantra murtim, form representation of transcendental sound, amurtikam, the Lord, who has no material form, yajate, worship, yajna, Vishnu, Purusham, the personality of Godhead, he alone, samyak, perfectly, darshana, one who has seen, puman, person. Translation: thus he is the actual seer who worships in the form of transcendental sound representation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who has no material form. Please repeat. Thus,
he is the actual seer
who worships
in the form of transcendental sound representation,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Vishnu,
who has no material form. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Our present senses are all made of material elements, and therefore they are imperfect in realizing the transcendental form of Lord Vishnu. He is therefore worshipped by sound representation via the transcendental method of chanting. Anything which is beyond the scope of experience by our imperfect senses can be realized fully by the sound representation. A person transmitting sound from a far distant place can be factually experienced. If this is materially possible, why not spiritually? This experience is not a vague, impersonal experience. It is actually an experience of the transcendental personality of Godhead, who possesses the pure form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. In the Amarakosh Sanskrit dictionary, the word murti carries import in twofold meanings, namely form and difficulty. Therefore, a murtikam is explained by Acharya Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as meaning without difficulty. The transcendental form of eternal bliss and knowledge can be experienced by our original spiritual senses, which can be revived by chanting of the holy mantras or transcendental sound representations. Such sound should be received from the transparent agency of the bona fide spiritual master, and the chanting may be practiced by the direction of the spiritual master. That will gradually lead us nearer to the Lord. This method of worship is recommended in the Pancharatrika system, which is both recognized and authorized. The Pancharatrika system has the most authorized codes for transcendental devotional service. Without the help of such codes, one cannot approach the Lord. Certainly,
not by dry philosophical speculation. The Panchatrika system is both practical and suitable for this age of quarrel. The Panchatrika is more important than the Vedanta for this modern age.
Iti murtyabhidanena mantramurtyamamurtikam yajate yagyapurusham sasam yagdarshana puman.
Thus he is the actual seer who worships in the form of transcendental sound representation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, who has no material form. Prabhupada begins the purport with the statement that is especially expressed in the Padma Purana, which he quotes frequently. And that is that the Lord cannot be understood by the blunt material senses. But if one engages in his service, beginning with the tongue, then the Lord reveals himself to such a person. So it's not that the Lord can be easily seen, and sometimes people ask, can you show me God, or how can he be revealed? And the answer is very clear in this verse and in other verses, bhakti scriptures, that through the transcendental sound vibration one can see him. Atashi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahim Indriye Sevun Mukihi Jivado Swayameva Spratyada. Sevun means by service. And what's the service? Using the tongue. Jihwa means the tongue. Adao means first, begin with the tongue. So if you begin by serving the Lord with your tongue, says the verse, then the Lord will reveal himself, being pleased with such a servitor. So this is a profound beginning to the purport. And then he says that sound in general is the element that reveals to us that which we can't see normally. And he gives the example that if you hear something from a faraway place, then you can understand what's going on there. You can even see it in your mind. Oftentimes when we're on conference calls, I notice the uncanny way that I can understand who's speaking. And there could be 20 people on the call and I can't see them. But even if somebody starts to talk, it's just one syllable, or even clears their throat, you know, about to talk, I can tell who it is. And the picture comes into my mind that, oh, this is such and such. Go ahead, and I'll even say their name, and I'm right, because I can understand something through the sound vibration. Prabhupada also talks about the way sound is creative. In the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a verse that talks about the beginning of the creation and how it begins through the sound vibration. And Prabhupada says that anything we want to create in this world begins with the subtle element. We may think about something, and then to manifest it, we'll speak about it. For instance, if you want to build a skyscraper building, then you would utter the words, I want to build a skyscraper building. This is a seed mantra. And someone would say, oh, I can help you. Well, how will you help me? Let's talk about it. And you get together and talk. Any community that you see that has some structure to it, anything, it started with the sound vibration, people talking about it. Or perhaps you could say even they thought about it and then began to manifest it even more through speaking about it. And then by getting directions, which are spoken, how to put the cement together and put a crane, where to get the crane. And gradually, step by step, something material is built. So sound is creative in this way. And through mantra, we see there's a picture in the Bhagavatam of Lord Brahma. And the many syllables, transcendental syllables or syllables for creation are there on the different limbs of his body. And he's speaking them, and as he speaks, the creation
takes place by the mantra. So the sound vibration, and especially not just sound vibration, but actually the specific sounds, which Prabhupada describes here as codes, are sensible. That is, we can understand them, and we can also create with them. And there are very specific sounds which liberate one from this material world. So the verse begins, Iti Murti Abhidhanena Mantra Murtim Amurtikam. Normally it's difficult. Someone says, can you show me God? Well, you don't have the qualification to see him through your eyes. But this verse then says, but you can see him easily, Amurtikam. Because Murti has two meanings, maybe more than two, but two of them that are being mentioned in this context are, one, form, Murti. Everyone knows that because they go to buy some Murtis at the Murti Walla. Even Americans know what Murti means on that side. And then, a Murtikam, you put the akar in front of Murti, and then it means without form or without difficulty, because Murti also means, the second meaning is difficulty. So that which is Murti, or difficult, is revealed, Amurtikam, without difficulty, by the sound vibration, by the mantra, which is the actual item itself. There's no difference between the sound and the person in the transcendental realm. So when you say Krishna, you're actually associating directly with Krishna. So iti murti abhidhanena mantra murtim amurtikam yajyate yajyate yajya purusham. So this way of worshiping the Supreme is sa samyag darshanapuman, is the means through which you can have the full darshan. Sa samyag, as we know from the samyak kirtan or the sankirtan, it's the perfect or complete way. Samyag, sasamyag, darshana means to see Puman, the person. So one who chants the mantras can, without difficulty, see the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. And then Prabhupada goes on to mention that there's a pancharatrik system, which is the abbreviated system, especially for this age. It gives the meaning of the Vedas, but in a practical way, so that anyone can take up the worship of the Supreme through the pancharatrik system. And within the pancharatrik system of worshiping the deity, there's an entire lifestyle that accompanies that. And there are mantras, which, again, I like the phrase codes, because we can all understand how codes work, that nowadays, people do a lot of coding, and when you put the right combinations of letters together, then you can make them do stuff, all kinds of stuff. And so we have a preliminary understanding of how those codes work, but they're mentioned here in this context, in the spiritual sense too, that they can awaken us to and come to, so we can come to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. The Vedanta Sutra says, anavriti shabdat, anavriti shabdat, which means that through the sound, through the codes of the mantras, then one can be uncovered and can actually see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One can come to know the Lord perfectly. One can become liberated by sound. And one can also become more and more entangled by sound also, depending on which kind of sound vibration one listens to. Therefore, the way in which we take in various kinds of sound will determine our consciousness. And it can be so significant, the sound that we listen to, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead will reveal himself to those who listen carefully. In fact, this is mentioned also. The intentionality behind the listening that we do is something that Krishna notices. For instance, if you choose to listen to the Srimad Bhagavatam or to the
the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then Krishna takes note of that from within the heart. So it's mentioned in the, at the outset of the Bhagavatam, Sadyo Hridyavarudyate Trakriti Bhishu Shushu Bhishtakshanat. Sadyo Hridyavarudyate, that the Lord, he's already there within our hearts. However, I don't notice him really, because I'm distracted and I'm looking elsewhere. But by hearing the Bhagavatam, or rather, if one gives one's attention to hearing Bhagavatam, then Sadyo Hridyavarudyate, Krishna becomes so appreciative that the person is giving his or her attention to hearing the Bhagavatam, that as Prabhupada puts it in his translation of that verse, that the Lord becomes packed up, compact within one's heart. Means that, as is expressed even more elaborately in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in relationship to this second verse of the Bhagavatam, Sadyo Hridyavarudyate, that the Lord becomes inclined towards anyone who listens to his name or hears his name or hears the Srimad Bhagavatam. And so if one gives one's attention, which is the main thing that we have to give, to hearing the Bhagavatam or the holy name, then Krishna also helps from within the heart. And we know from the first canto, second chapter, that this is true also. Krishna says, Suta Goswami, Srinvatam Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hrityantaksto Hibadrani Vitunoti Suhritsatam. Lord Sri Krishna, who is the Paramatma, the super soul in everyone's heart, and the benefactor, the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who relishes his messages, which are in themselves virtuous, when properly heard and chanted. Therefore, the process of taking the Pancharatra and the mantras that are passed down is extremely important for enlightenment in this age. Now Prabhupada mentions in the purport, I'm just trying to cover the main points before we discuss them a little more, that one should accept this through the medium of a bona fide spiritual master. In other words, don't go just to a book and take the mantras yourself and think that they'll work. Because there's a transcendental system. Just like in network marketing, there are a lot of companies that sell products through distributors. And if you call the company, they won't sell it to you directly. They'll say, you have to buy through my distributor. And then they'll give you the name of the distributor and you can go get the product through the independent distributor who's selling it. Are you aware of this, such arrangements? Yeah, like in what? What did you buy through a distributor?
A water filter.
Yeah, a water filter. Books. So this is mentioned, actually sometimes people ask, why is there a first initiation? How is that? Isn't this some kind of concoction? In fact, the anti-party brings up this point sometimes to say that, you know, this is some kind of new thing that's it's not there. But actually, our acharyas, like Jiva Goswami mentions in his Sandarbha, the importance of taking the holy name from a Vaishnava. And so does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary on the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which remarkably he mentions that if there's a Vaishnava guru who can give you the mantra, but you don't take it, you think, oh, it's the trouble, there's so much trouble taking shelter of a guru and accepting the mantra in that way, I'll just take it myself. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, one is chanting, but he's doing Vaishnava Paradha because he's committing the third offense while chanting, which is disobeying the orders of the spiritual master, or considering the spiritual master an ordinary person. Therefore, he says, to have the full effect of these mantras, the Pancharatrik mantra and also the Hare Krishna mantra, one should accept the mantra through a Vaishnav guru. He says, if one chants anyway, it's okay. He said, in the next life, he can get a guru, and then he can make the perfection of the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So this is also Krishna's system, that he passes on the mantras through gurus. The mantras sometimes are mentioned to be like the seeds of a banyan tree. And the banyan, there's a environmental peculiarity that the seeds don't germinate unless they're eaten by a certain kind of sparrow that lives around the banyan tree. And once the sparrow eats the seeds and then excretes them again, they germinate, otherwise not on their own. So in a similar way, these Panchratantric mantras, when they're taken from a guru, then they have the full effect, that then they'll germinate. Otherwise, if you simply take them from a book, then good luck with the mantras. You have to be initiated into the system in order for it to be effective. And then Prabhupada makes the distinction that in this age, the Panchratantric mantras are more important than Vedanta. For one thing, Vedanta requires a certain environment. You have to grow up in a pristine environment and be trained in the Vedantic mantras. And we don't have that lifestyle anymore, in case you haven't noticed. However, in this age, by the mercy of Narada Muni and other sages, the Panchratantric mantras are fully potent. So one can receive them through the proper system and then chant the mantras. For instance, by doing deity worship, it's especially potent because there are many names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As you're doing the mantras, as you're doing the worship, you'll be saying many names of the Lord along with Namaha, 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 and seeing the form of the Lord and so forth. And just as a final point, before we take reflections, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra chanting, of course, is open to anyone. And anyone can begin chanting it or hearing it and making advancement in devotional service. I did mention that if one wants to come to the highest perfection of chanting, one should accept through a Vaishnav guru in initiation. Simultaneously, there's a different system. The first item I mentioned, chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, is considered to be part of the Bhagavat Marg, a direct way of worshiping the Supreme Lord. And then there's the Panchratantric Vidhi, which means deity worship. And the process of Panchratantric Vidhi is important in this age alongside the Bhagavat Marg, or chanting Hare Krishna, because, well, like somebody said once, what happened to just chant Hare Krishna? And then we might reply, all right, go ahead, just chant Hare Krishna. Let's just see you just chant Hare Krishna. If you can just chant Hare Krishna, then fine, go ahead and just chant Hare Krishna. But in the age of Kali, people are born into complexities, and therefore the Panchratantric system is required to purify our senses so that we can chant Hare Krishna. And therefore, Prabhupada describes how these two systems go side by side like they're rails on a train track. And the train runs, that's us, the train. We run on those two tracks, and we can go back to Godhead by doing the Bhagavat Marg and the Panchratantric Vidhi. Those are a few observations about the verse and the purport, in a very abstract form. But now, to go deeper into more detail, let's take reflections and questions so that we can flesh it out a little more. One, two.
Based on what you said of Diksha and so on, I was just reflecting on those two words, Mantra Murti, and just thinking how amazing it is that at initiation we actually do a personal deity to worship in the form of the mantra.
Yeah, the mantra is the deity. So you can carry it with you wherever you go and stay constantly in contact with the mantra. It's a combination of syllables. It's mentioned in the Namashtakam by Rupa Goswami. Yam Nama Deha Shrava. He says, anyway, it'll come back to me, but he says that the Maha Mantra is a supreme combination of syllables. Nama Maksharakite. that is the mantra, Hare Krishna mantra, it's a supreme combination of syllables. And it is the perfect deity. It's the perfect form of the deity. Yes, Prabhu. Paramakshara Krite, that's it. Paramakshara Krite. So param means supreme. Paramakshara Krite means the supreme combination of syllables. It's nice to know that code. Yes.
I like what you said about let's see who just chant Hare Krishna. And it was reminding me in Chaitanya Charitamrita twice the Hare Nam verse appears, famous verse saying only the holy name, only the holy name, only the holy name in this age of Kali Yuga. And in one of those purports, of all the purports in all of his books that Prabhupada could choose to discuss this topic, in one of those purports he emphasizes deity worship and explains, as you just had, about how they run on parallel tracks, and without that, because we're generally so contaminated and full of so many tendencies towards bad habits, we'll accrue more offenses than we will Sukriti when chanting. So worshipping the deity, according especially to cleanliness and punctuality, and he emphasizes that also in that purport, that deity worship that follows the standard of cleanliness and punctuality will bring us to that place where we'll be able to chant holy name offensively, and then Shudanam can come.
Oh, thank you very much for the Shastric support. Prabhu?
I was just wondering when you're describing from the thing without the bona fide inclusion method, the mantras don't work, traditionally they don't work. So what I was thinking is how is there anywhere in the shastra that it describes, I guess, more directly the effect of the mantra when we have a inclusion method versus when we just, you know, many people may not have a inclusion method and chant the same mantra. And I guess then kind of the efficiency of that is for those that may chant the mantra and may not have spiritual mantra, how we can encourage them, you know, to actually take that step.
Well, it's not that one can't make or doesn't make advancement in chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra before having a guru, because the name is non-different from Krishna. It depends on one's attitude in chanting, how much advancement one will make. And Prabhupada mentions this in the purport to Devahuti's verse in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, where she is mentioning the potency of the holy name. In fact, there's two verses there. One, she says, Yannam Adeha Shravananu Kirtana Yapravanad Yatsmaranad Api Kuchit Shradhopi Sadya Savanaya Kopate Kutakpunaste Bhagavan Nudarshanad. And that this verse mentions the potency of hearing and chanting, and says, she says, that such a person who's hearing and chanting becomes elevated to a higher status. And that person is no longer or immediately by chanting the holy name becomes elevated to the status of one who is qualified to perform Vedic sacrifices. And Prabhupada mentions in his purport that this is true. And the acharyas all agree on this, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami. But then Prabhupada gives the caveat that it depends on the quality of the chanting as well. So there's no doubt, as mentioned in the over and over again in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that there various ways one may incidentally chant the holy name and be freed from all sinful reactions. And at the same time, as one takes the holy name, there are ways in which it becomes more and more effective. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Srinadapi Sunichena, Tororapi Sahishnuna, that to chant effectively, one must be very humble, meek and humble. And taking guidance and shelter is a means of doing that. So the answer to the second question is that we should emphasize to people who have faith in the holy name to continue chanting. as much as possible. And it's a natural progression that when somebody has faith, Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha, to Bhajana Kriya, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when you have faith, which means having faith in Shastra and the holy name, then naturally you'll want to have association with others who have it. That's natural in any discipline. As soon as you become interested in bocce ball, you want to find out all the bocce ball players wherever you go. And you might want to get a teacher also. So the process, the progressive process means that you have faith and then you come for association. And then after association, then one takes it very seriously and enters into a relationship with a devotee through diksha. So Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangata Bhajana Kriya means that one makes vows to chant very seriously. So we can fan the spark in people, and we do by the Hare Krishna movement and the kinds of sanghas that we have to encourage people to go on chanting. And then at some point, they'll come to want to have a more direction and connection, bhajana kriya. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Diksha Kali Bhakta Kari Atma Samarpan She Kali Bhakta Kari Atma Samarpan. So Diksha Kali Bhakta Kari Atma Samarpan. So first of all, he says that when a person samarpana fully surrenders through the process of diksha, taking initiation, then She Kali Krishna Tari Kari Atma Sam. Then Krishna considers that person to be in a higher category, that this person has come to the higher level. That's also mentioned in, it's mentioned in the Nectar of Instruction, Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta dikshasti chet pranati bhisha bhajantam isham shushushaya bhajanam vignamananyamanya nindadi shunya hridamipsita sangalabhya. Which means that there are various levels of devotees, and we should appropriately associate with them. For those who are chanting, those who chant Hare Krishna at all, if they just say Hare Krishna, then in our mind, manasadriyata, we should offer respects. And then if somebody has taken the next step and they say, okay, I'll take bhajana kriya, I'm taking a vow to do this, and I'll accept from the spiritual master, then he says we should go out of our way to offer, demonstratively offer respects to that person. We should offer obeisances. And then if we meet somebody who's become very advanced in chanting Hare Krishna and is purified, then we should try to associate with that person as much as possible. We should give service and so forth. So there are various levels. So the implication of that verse is we should respect those people who are attracted to chanting Hare Krishna, and we should encourage them. We should encourage ourselves also. Yes, please.
So at the beginning you were just saying that people
can't hear the question. Could you just speak into the
question? You were explaining that the effect of our chanting is based on the person's sincerity, and there'll be many people that sincerely chant that may not have a spiritual master. But it's a proper understanding that one's seriousness of one's sincerity is that they will naturally then eventually want to take to have a spiritual master.
Yeah, actually this is that's why I quoted the verse Diksha Kali Bhakta Kari that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, this is a sign of a full surrender that one accepts a spiritual master. And also that if you begin with Shraddha, then you want Sadhu Sangha. Sadhu Sangha means that you take shelter. Doesn't mean that you come hang out. But you know, you go to, there's a certain way to associate with sadhus. And that's why I quoted the next verse, which is the way you associate with sadhus is it varies. I want if a person is chanting Hare Krishna even one time, then you worship them in your mind. And if they're initiated, then you should offer your respects to them. And if they're very advanced, then you should take shelter of them. That's what he's saying, basically. So what are the reflections? Anything that you heard from the purport or the discussion so far that's stuck in your mind? Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. This last point that came up, that sadhu sangha means taking shelter. Really
hold that right in front. Yeah, like that.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
The last point that just came up, that sadhu sangha means taking shelter, is really profound. And I just, when I read, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita, and see examples of how devotees are associating with one another, the way that they interact, their speech, and so on, it's happening at such a high level, and it's really extremely humbling to see how, you know, how Lord Chaitanya, in the role of a devotee, is interacting with others, other of his associates, or like, King Prithu, when he receives the four Kumaras, how he's receiving them, the type of glorification he's offering, the glorification they're offering in return. Also in the Jagadharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives a lot of beautiful illustrations of Vaishnava etiquette and the way that Vaishnavas interact with one another. And it's such a such an art and an amazing amazing thing that is really happening on an extremely high level. And so I appreciate, because often we think, you know, well, Shraddha Sadhu Sangha, okay, our goal, and then Bhajan Kriya, you know, there's like 9 stages, so things don't really get very advanced until I've got some taste or I've got some asakti or whatever. But actually, just to properly apply sadhu sangha is very advanced, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and we find, at least my observation is, in devotional communities where the Vaishnava etiquette has been taught properly and is being observed, there's a sweetness there that you don't get elsewhere. And that there's a way that people who are new to Krishna consciousness, and they see the way that the Vaishnavas are appreciating appropriately according to each Vaishnava's station in devotional service, that even new people, when they see that, they actually, their hearts open, and they want to enter into it also. There's a flow of mercy that comes down when Vaishnava etiquette is properly applied.
One quick testimonial to that point. At our center, the Harmony Collective is kind of slanted in Islam, Michigan. There was one Catholic girl in her mid to late 20s who very devout Catholic, and you would invite her to the class on Christmas Day once?
Yeah,
strange Michelle. So she, you know, she really just somehow found our little center and felt comfortable and at home, even though, you know, over the course of 2+ years coming around and making friends with everyone, she remained extremely devout in her Catholicism. And, you know, she didn't really adopt our theology, but she really enjoyed coming. And one time she just said, well, it's because when I'm here, everyone wants to talk about God, and that's what I like to do. So I like coming. And now she's doing a teaching position in China, and also doing some kind of covert ministry there. But she's still in touch with some of the devotees and at the Hare Krishna shows. It's true that when there's people who are, you know, God's at the center and that sweetness is there, people become attracted.
Yeah. This is the attractive feature of any community. And we find that this becomes the genesis of actually spreading Krishna consciousness. Wherever there's even a small group of devotees who are hearing and chanting in what I like to call a safe environment, that means the environment's protected by Vaishnava etiquette, and there's a way in which it's a criticism-free zone. If there's a criticism, it should be done in a very practical way, according to Shastra, and without any malice, to help other people, which is a real art. And when devotees feel that the safety of such a group of devotees, where they can come and regularly hear and chant, and process what they're going through in life, 90% of what people bring up has to do with the complexities in their own lives, and not so much the philosophy in the Srimad Bhagavatam and so forth. Although by hearing that there's the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam, as I mentioned before, there are various ways in which the Bhagavatam informs us how to deal with our complexities. But when devotees have that, there's an unlimited potential for Krishna consciousness to spread, because this is what actually nourishes the creeper of devotional service, is this intimate association of devotees, which means that they develop trust. This is the most valuable asset anybody can have, is trust in devotees. And you find when that's there, then there's something that's palpable in a sangha, whether it's small or large. And when it's not there, you can have a lot of people in a room, but there's something missing. And you feel that you don't feel the same impetus to surrender. When we feel safe and we trust, that's when we surrender and we can go deeper in devotional service. So it's not something that you can get by brick and mortar. You put brick and mortar all you like, but unless inside you have proper Vaishnav Sangha and a safe environment for hearing and chanting, which is abhorrent of Vaishnava Aparadha, and very careful to appropriately worship Vaishnavas. When you have that, then you have a formula for success. And that can become the Vaishnavas who grow up in that kind of environment then can go out and actually spread Krishna consciousness effectively to others around the world. Prabhu.
You mentioned the anti-party and a little controversy around the idea of first initiation, and then also then there's the idea that you're not initiated until you have second initiation. Can you describe a little bit more that dynamic and what some places also Prabhupada says in his books that real initiation means second initiation. So how can we digest that
Well, one of the best ways to understand initiation is through the pen of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, describes initiation as a process, not an event. And he borrows from the South Indian, you know, like Ramanuja paradigm of Pancha Samskar, in which you have these various steps in the process of initiation. So first is called tapa. Tapa means that you begin to develop a sense that the material world is not my home, and that you really develop this determination that, you know, I'm not going to stay entangled here. I'm going to wake up now. So tapa has to be there in the beginning. And you find when people come to Krishna consciousness, if they have a very strong sense of this, that I really want this, that then they can move on from there. So tapas, and then pandra means that
one begins to identify oneself as a Vaishnava. And in our case, like a Gaudiya Vaishnava. So a person comes into the association, and Pundra actually means Urdhva Pundra. It means to wear the tilak, the up and down marks. Because what one's doing is expressing oneself, like, this is who I am, this is my identity. I identify myself as a Vaishnava. I'm not an American, I'm not an Indian, I'm not man, woman, but I'm actually, what am I? I'm an eternal servant of Krishna. This becomes one's identity, and one begins to express it outwardly. And then the next step comes nama, which means that one accepts not only the holy name as the main way to come to perfection in life, but also one gets a new name. You trade in your old identity. And after all, when you're born, I mean, what's the first thing happens? Some strangers come along and slap a name tag on you. Say, here, boy, your new name is Schnicky. You come with us and we'll teach you how to do weird stuff. And so, you know, then you trade all that back in again. It's like, I'm putting my name back as a connection to the spiritual world. My name is Das or Dasi. And so that's the next step. It's one of the steps. It's taking first initiation, accepting the name as the all in all. And then after that, one gets mantra. If one is steady in chanting the holy name of the Lord, begins to develop good qualities by chanting, then by the estimation of a Vaishnav guru, and this is also very clear in Shastra, that the time for second initiation is the time that's discerned by the guru. You can't make it up yourself or take it from a book. It has to come from a guru, who then will say, now's the time. In fact, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, in the first two Vilases, there's a detailed description of initiation and the whole process. And there goes into when's the best time to take Diksha. So there's a lot of Shastric references, say, not on this day, not on that day, this one's okay, that one's not okay. There's a lot of details. You'd have to get a really good astrologer to figure out which one matches. But at the very end of the list, he says, but actually, whatever day the guru decides, that's the best day. And so then after mantra comes yaga, which means to worship the deity. And he describes these as a process of devotional service, not one event. So it's a continuous process that one goes through, or a process that leads somewhere from one thing to the next. And when you see it in that light, it's not that, you know, okay, I took initiation and then it's over or something like that. That's not the idea either, because initiation means beginning. Now I'm situated properly, so now I can really begin developing in my devotional service. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was describing, he was speaking with Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami in Puri, and he was telling them how when you take initiation, your body changes. You don't have a spiritual body, but you have almost, it's called a sadaka deha, you get a practitioner's body. And your situation is different. So that, you know, from that position, now you're ready to, you know, you have full support, you're lined up according to the Shastra, and you can take full advantage of the mantras and your situation. Did you need a follow-up question, or did that help? Okay. Yes, Prabhu? Look at this teamwork. Nice.
I just had a follow-up question.
Yes.
So you said you're referring to Lord Chaitanya has mentioned to Haridas Thakur that after taking initiation, we get to a sadhaka body, which is as good as a spiritual body. But then I was just, my devil's advocate was telling me that. So how is it that even after taking initiation, there are so many offenses, or some people just leave the process, or find it very difficult to follow rules or follow the commitments which they've made during initiation. So,
well, the reason is they're hard to follow if you're not attentive, especially. Did you know you just turned the light on? Or it just came on by itself, I don't know why. The rules and regulations are not so easy for most people, because we're involved with the material world, and we've been involved since the time immemorial. The Hamsa Avatar tells in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam how when somebody's born into the world, it's a foregone conclusion that they'll be entangled, because the sense objects are embedded in the mind, and the mind's embedded in the sense objects. We have an intimate relationship with the material world through the external body, through our prarabdha karma. We're already predisposed to try predisposed. It's even deeper than that. We're already connected to certain kinds of sense objects as soon as we come into the world. Like a hog, when a hog is born, it only has one thing on its mind, and I'm not even going to mention what it is. And its nose is stuck to the ground, you know, to eat garbage, and that's just what it does. So it is a little difficult. And we're not dead stones. We have free will throughout the process. So just because someone's taken initiation doesn't mean they can't change their mind. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advocates, you know, be careful. Why would somebody say be careful if you couldn't, step off the edge somewhere? So this is the beauty of devotional service. It's our choice. And when somebody surrenders, that's why it's a big deal. Otherwise, it wouldn't really be a big deal if we were just machines. You just like lock the machine in, okay, it's a Lego. You know, you clicked it in there, and it's like, okay, it's done. But we're not like that. We're conscious beings. So when we make a choice, it has impact on the whole universe. When someone decides that I'm going to surrender to Krishna, that's something that it actually has weight. And you can't fake it either. That's why it's the most real thing. When somebody actually surrenders, you start feeling the potency of that. So, our free will is there. So we're given all kinds of, Krishna extends himself unlimitedly to us, and we can take advantage or not at any stage. So it's a regulative principle that one should not fall down, and one should be careful. That's another thing Prabhupada said. Not only should you practice devotional service, but you should also be careful, because if you take it for granted, or you cut corners somewhere, then there could be a big consequence. And there's stories in the Bhagavatam to show that. Like Bharat Maharaj was a victim of misplaced compassion, and also not having enough sangha. That's another thing. He didn't have enough sangha, so he shows by example that here's what can happen even if you're very advanced, Bharat Maharaj. Also, another realization I had recently when reading the Bhagavatam, it's a big thing going back to Godhead. As Prabhupada writes in the light of the Bhagavad, he said, going back to Godhead is not a plaything. He said, your success is assured if you continue the process diligently. He said, but don't take it as a plaything. So I was thinking about that. We were reading the Bhagavatam. There's so many incidents where, for instance, Vritrasura, he was Trichaketu previously. And Trichaketu, I mean, he went through traumatic experience getting to where he was. He was a king. He had desires. He wanted them fulfilled. He met Angira. He asked for a son, and Angira gave it to him as a benediction curse. He got the son, finally, but then the son was murdered. And how do you think that made him feel? On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like really nice, and 1, I mean, it's like the worst thing that could possibly happen. But that was necessary, and Angira and Narada foresaw what would happen, so they could come back and have a teachable moment where they could instruct him, because he wasn't instructable before that. He had one thing on his mind, and that was, I have to have a son in order to become happy. And he couldn't hear until, but then when he had that experience and he had the guidance and shelter of those sages, it penetrated, and he surrendered and he took up the process very seriously. He was able to see the Lord directly through the mantra within 7 days. 7 days and seven nights of intense chanting. He was able to directly come in contact with Sankarsana and get instruction directly from the Lord. And then after that, he became a great purified personality. And he was traveling around the universe in some kind of airplane, some hotshot airplane, with all kinds of beautiful women from heaven, you know, singing. And I mean, it's kind of an interesting situation there. He was already pure, and then still some kind of thing flying around in an airplane. But then he ran into Lord Shiva and Parvati. And so he looks down and he sees Parvati sitting on the lap of Lord Shiva and a bunch of sages sitting around too. And he just thought, that's a kind of a funny situation. So he's like, ha ha, that's funny. There's Lord Shiva with his wife sitting on his lap in front of everybody else. And he kind of said it out loud. And it's like kind of a gray area whether it was an offense or not, because, you know, if you read all the purports again and again and again, you'll still come to like, you know, wasn't an offense? Wasn't. But it doesn't matter, because Parvati took it as an offense and said, how could you say that about my husband? You should fall down. And so she made him fall down and became Vritrasura, who was the son of Tvashta. Tvashta wanted to kill Indra, because Indra did a lot of bad stuff. I won't even go into it, it's a laundry list. But suffice it to say, he killed his other son, chopped off his heads, even though he was trying to do Indra a favor. So as Vritrasura, I'm getting my point here, Vritrasura then was commissioned, you know, a commissioned demon, hire a demon to come and kill somebody. It was a hit job. And they did it wrong, they botched it. So when they did the mantras, they said the mantras a little wrong. So this big demon that was supposed to come and kill Indra then was destined to be killed by Indra. And so this battle took place. And this is one of the most amazing sections of the Bhagavatam, when you read the conversations between Indra and Vritrasura when they're having their battle. Vritrasura is actually a pure devotee. And Indra is kind of caught up still in the material world, even though he's very dear to Lord Krishna and he's a devotee too. And Vritrasura has understood that his destiny was to get killed, and when he was killed, he'd go back to Godhead. And he advised Indra, he said, do your duty. Don't back down. Don't be afraid of me, because if I kill you, then that was the Lord's arrangement. If you kill me, it's the Lord's arrangement. He said, we're like, life is like a game board. Game board over here? You have a game board, and we're just pieces, little players on the game board. Just play the game and see what happens. And so Indra finally, and it's a long story how he got the thunderbolt, because, you know, they had to go beg charity from a great sage, Dadansha, and ask him for his bones and charity. Little donation, what do you need? That's level like 100, you know. We had level 1 through 5. It's like, who wants to do level 100? You just have to give your bones. So Dadansha, you know, he said, okay, I'll give my body. It's for Vishnu. You know, he has some plan, so it's a good idea to give stuff up if you figure out that it's for Krishna. So he gave up his body, and there was the thunderbolt. You know, all these things were coming together. And finally, in the battle, Indra actually wasn't even able to kill Vritrasura. It was kind of a fluke. He cut off his arms and everything like that. And finally, Vritrasura swallowed him, because he was a great warrior. He didn't stop fighting when he got all his limbs chopped off. He came after him with his mouth. Like, and he swallowed Indra. And Indra was inside, and then he busted out. And then his thing was to chop off the head of Vritrasura. So it took him a year to chop off his head. When we were reading this, I was thinking, this is pretty drastic, you know. I mean, here it is, Trichaketu is a pure devotee. Now he has to become a big demon. It's tumultuous. And now he has to get his head chopped off, and then he goes back to Godhead. And that's one story, but there are many others that are as tumultuous and convoluted. And I was thinking, you know, what's it take to go back to Godhead? It's not like you die in your sleep and all of a sudden, you know, it's like, hey, he's gone. He went back to heaven. And to get rid of the last vestiges of my attachment to the material world, there's got to be some big production. Like, boom, you know. And then finally, you know, after several editions of, you know, like lifetime, and then he became a deer, and then the deer, you know, went to the ashram and performed Ashtanga Yoga, became Judd Barrett, who really was careful. I mean, he didn't want to deal with anything, because he knew the seriousness of this. So it's not a plaything to go back to Godhead. You have to be really serious. So this idea that, you know, you take initiation and then you won't fall down, it's not like that. You have to take it up yourself. This is your choice. Somehow or other, you have to develop capacity and you have to develop determination that I'm doing this. And you can see from these incidents I'm mentioning, you really have to get into it and put your life and soul. It's not like I joined an institution, so I'm guaranteed I'm going back to Godhead. I got baptized, you know, I'm saved. You really have to save yourself. In a lot of ways, by proactive, preemptive surrender. I give up completely. Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Just two points on that. One is the pastime of Srila Prabhupada, how devotees heard him in a prayer every day with the deities that please. Don't let it fall down. This is our founder Acharya showing by his example how important it is to be alert. And second thing was just reminded me of when you were saying about the purport from the 9th chapter about the accidental fall down, where Srila Prabhupada also kind of says that because of a previous situation, but sometimes devotees may have an accidental fall down, and then he obviously qualifies from can't use it as an excuse. So,
yeah. And I would change it from may have an accidental fall down to say they definitely will have an accidental fall down. I mean, it's the material world, and this is, I'm not just making this up. This is Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur mentions it in the commentary, 11th canto of Bhagavatam, to one of the verses that describe Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there he says that the effect of Kali Yuga is so strong that it's obvious that even the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're trying to follow him, do devotional service, they're going to be affected one way or another. And so he encouraged them, he said, you shouldn't become discouraged or morose. Because one thing is that the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so powerful that you'll be delivered. And that Kali Yuga is so pernicious that you'll definitely be affected by it. So don't just give up when you have some kind of lapse into worldliness. And that's what Prabhupada said is the difference between an accidental fall down and an intentional one. Of course, we heard this secondhand, but it's in the memories of Prabhupada. The devotee asked Prabhupada that question. He recalls that Prabhupada said, if they come back to the process, then it was accidental. That's pretty liberal. And if you don't come back, then you're doing it on purpose, because why wouldn't you come back? I mean, why wouldn't you, you know, come back to it? You're trying to stay asleep, which is really a torturous thing to do to yourself. But we do it nonetheless. So, yes, Prabhu.
So I was remembering when you talked about Vritrasura and the gray area. And when you're talking about the cluster in the area, I remember hearing a class by Kadamba Karana Swami Maharaj. I must have heard it hundreds of times. and he's talking about how Krishna turned up the heat to cook him a little quick.
Yeah, this is, you know, we always talk about the ripe fruits. We go out to pick the ripe fruits, leave the other ones on the vine. It just reminded me when Janaka Rishi joined Krishna consciousness, he was a raw foodist. So, you know, he liked Krishna consciousness. He got it. But he wouldn't take prasadam with the devotees. I mean, if there was some maha fruit, he'd take that, because raw foodist, he'd only take whatever's raw. There, especially back in those days, there were no special diets. There was just what you get what you get. So he wasn't eating that much. And the devotees kept coming over, as they would do, and said, come on, you know, you got to take prasadam. And he wouldn't do it. So finally, Siddhasarup Prabhu came over, and he sat next to him and goes, so I hear you're a raw foodist. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, why are you eating that fruit? He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, it's cooked by the sun. And he goes, oh yeah, okay, bring me some halava then. But anyway, it reminded me of the cook of the sun would talk about ripe fruits and this thing, samsara dhavanada lita loka, tranayakara. You know, everyone's being cooked by the material world. And if a person's not a ripe fruit, then it's like, okay, no problem. You stay on the vine for a while. The heat gets turned up. So today's day, Gita Jayanti. It's a, actually what I see it as is one of the best excuses we have during the year to distribute Bhagavad Gita. I mean, that's just my perception of it. You know, when anybody chants the whole Gita, it's like they never feel unhappy afterwards. You think, like, someone might chant the whole Gita and they think, God, that was a waste of 2.5 hours. You know, I really feel bummed out now. Like at Govardhan Hill, whenever I walk around and I see people doing Dandavat Parikrama, even they bring the kids for a little vacation. You know, we're going on vacation, kids. Where are we going? Govardhan Hill. What are we going to do? Dandavat Parikrama. They're like, yay! They hop in the station wagon. They go off to Govardhan. And you see you walking around. I've never seen anybody down on the ground there looking up, feeling all bummed out. They always look happy. They may have that little stoic look on their face, like, you know, we're doing this. But they're happy. And same thing, anybody who chants the full Bhagavad Gita in one day, I always find out afterwards there's multiple calls come in and people say, hey, can we do it? Can we do this like every day? And I'm like, sure. Just call in sick and tell them you're not coming in anymore. That's what Sanatana Goswami did. But everyone always feels happy. So it's obviously a transcendental vibration by anecdotal evidence. And we'll be chanting at 6:30 tonight, the whole Bhagavad Gita. And also, it's a good time. We still have a few hours to invite people to donate to help distribute Bhagavad Gita's, because it's good to have a definite timeline. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Prema.
Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.